The Moon and Sixpence, dramatized in four parts by Jeffrey Siegel from the novel by W. Somerset Maugham. With Ronald Pickup as Maugham himself, Patrick Allen as Charles Strickland, a character inspired by the real-life painter Paul Gauguin, and with Ronnie Stevens, Rosalind Ayres, and Margaret Whiting. Part 2, Loose in Paris.
It had pleased Mrs. Strickland to regard herself as one of London's more successful literary hostesses. At her tea or luncheon parties, she saw to it that those present, while drawn from the broadest possible swathe of literary society, were nevertheless carefully selected to provide a balanced social occasion. At the same time, she was ever ready to lend a sympathetic ear to a recital of one's troubles and to proffer encouragement whenever it was necessary or requested. It was therefore no small shock to her when, after 17 years of marriage, her husband, Charles Strickland, a dull and somewhat inarticulate stockbroker, deserted her and their two children and went off to Paris to become a painter. Despite our relatively short acquaintance, it was I who was charged with the task of following him to Paris to persuade him to return. When I reported to her my lack of success, and that, contrary to what was believed, there was no other woman involved, and that he had in truth left her driven solely by an overwhelming urge to paint, the violence of her reaction was terrible to behold. But Amy Strickland was a woman of character, and that particular response was short-lived. She soon showed herself brave, but not too obviously, cheerful, but not brazenly, and she frequently appeared more anxious to listen to the troubles of others than to discuss her own. Her demeanour, in fact, was perfect. Whenever she spoke of her husband, it was with pity.
You know, Mr. Maugham, I am convinced you were mistaken about Charles being alone. You see, from what I've been able to gather, from certain sources that I can't reveal to you, I now know that he didn't leave England by himself.
In that case, he has a positive genius for covering his tracks.
What I mean is, if anyone talks to you about it, please don't contradict them if they say that he eloped with someone.
Very well.
Because it just wouldn't be true. To contradict it, I mean.
No?
No. You see, what appears to be the truth of the matter is that she was a dancer. She was in the ballet at the Empire. Charles saw her there. When she went back to Paris, he went with her.
Really?
Really. My authority for it is quite unimpeachable.
Ah, well, in that case, of
course I... Very simple and very sordid. But there. It's not the first time it's happened, and I dare say it won't be the last.
She was indeed a woman of resource. And this manifested itself no less in the way she set about coping with her financial situation.
It seems the obvious thing to do, Mr. Maugham. Knowing so many writers, I'm sure there is, to put it vulgarly, a market for me there.
I'm sure you're right.
The shorthand classes I find quite challenging. The typewriting less so. It's merely a matter of manual dexterity. But I shall master it.
And you'll certainly have no shortage of customers.
Of clients.
Count on me to be among the first, won't you?
I will. And as soon as I've set up in business, I'll let you know. And I shall look to you to recommend me to others.
Her confidence was more than justified. Within a remarkably short time, having let the flat and sold the furniture, she moved into rooms which also served for her as an office. The MacAndrews, her sister and brother-in-law, who were childless and in easy circumstances, arranged to undertake the care of the children, and Mrs. Strickland was ready to face the world anew. It was about 5 years after these events that I, too, decided that the time had come for change. I'd turned from books to the theatre, and was fortunate in enjoying some not inconsiderable success in that field. Nevertheless, I felt I was growing stale in London. Life was ordered too pleasantly. I needed to be elsewhere for a while. And it was Paris that called me back. I gave up my apartment and sold my few belongings. Shortly before I left, I called on Mrs. Strickland. She had made a considerable success of her business and now had offices in Chancery Lane, where she did little typing herself but spent the time supervising the four girls she employed. I found her now not only older and thinner, but it seemed to me also that her character had altered. That violent streak which manifested itself when her husband deserted her had condensed into a vein of steely hardness, while her social and artistic pretensions now displayed themselves as mere snobbery.
Robert is at Cambridge, of course, doing very well.
He's clever, is he?
Oh, shouldn't think so, but he's in with a very good set.
And what about your daughter?
Charlotte is enjoying life to the full. She came out this year, you know.
Ah.
And I can't tell you the number of dances she's invited to. The dear girl doesn't know where she is. She's so popular.
And what will she do, come into the business with you?
Oh, no. I'd never let her do that. She's so pretty, I'm sure she'll marry well.
I'd have thought it would be a help to you.
I wouldn't think of it. Mind you, what several people have suggested is that she should go on stage. But I could never consent to that either.
If she's pretty...
Oh, I'm sure she'd have no difficulty getting a part. But I shouldn't like her to mix with, well, people who work for the theatre.
Well,
Oh, dear. Forgive me, I'm sure you know what I mean.
Yes. Tell me, do you ever hear of your husband?
No. I haven't heard a word. He may be dead for all I know.
I may possibly run across him in Paris. Would you like me to let you know about him?
If he's in any real need, I'd be prepared to help him a little.
I'll remember that.
I could send you some money. And you could give it to him gradually, as he needed it.
That's very good of you.
It occurred to me that it is not true that suffering ennobles the character. Happiness does that sometimes, but suffering, for the most part, makes people mean, petty, and vindictive. Once arrived in Paris, I soon found myself a small and convenient apartment in the 9th arrondissement and settled in. My next task was to visit my old friend, Dirk Struve, whom I had not seen for over 4 years, and who was now living and working in a studio in nearby Montmartre. Let me tell you about Dirk Struve. I can best describe him as one of those whom you will think of, according to your character, with a derisive laugh or an embarrassed shrug of the shoulders. Nature had made him a buffoon, a fat little man with short legs, a round face, and prematurely bald. His round blue eyes were framed in large gold-rimmed spectacles which constantly slipped down his nose, and his eyebrows were so fair you couldn't see them. He reminded one of those jolly, fat merchants that Rubens painted. Dirk Struve was a painter too, but a very bad one. I had met him first in Rome, and I still remembered his pictures, how he revelled in the commonplace, meticulously painting his mustachioed peasants in large hats, urchins in becoming rags, women in bright petticoats dallying among cypresses against a cloudless sky. A photograph could not have been more accurate. He was correctly described by one of his colleagues as the master of the chocolate box, and to look at his pictures, you would have thought that Manet, and the rest of the Impressionists had never been.
I don't pretend to be a great painter. I'm not a Michelangelo, no. But I have something. I sell, and I bring romance into the homes of all sorts of people. And they buy my pictures not only in Holland, but in Norway, in Sweden, and Denmark. Oh, you can't imagine what the winters are like in those northern countries. So long and dark and cold. They need the Italy that I paint. They like to think that Italy is like my pictures. It's what they expect. And it's what I expected Italy to be like before I went there.
So it was an ideal he painted, and an ideal he looked for, and forever thought he had found, only to have it once more wrenched from his grasp, and this in turn made him an even greater object of ridicule. I tried my best not to laugh at him, but it was difficult, and it was frequently replaced by exasperation at the way he continually laid himself open to hurt. For I was truly fond of him, and in one regard at least, had the greatest respect for his judgment. Though so bad a painter, he had a very delicate feeling for art. His criticism was acute, he was quick to discover talent, and his praise was generous. He was, moreover, excellent company, and I was greatly looking forward to seeing him. Within the last couple of years, he had married an Englishwoman, whom I was now to meet for the first time.
I've told her so much about you, my dear fellow. I'm sure she feels as if she knows you intimately.
I'm delighted to meet you, Mrs. Struve.
How do you do?
But why didn't you let me know you were coming? How long have you been in Paris? Oh, if only you'd come an hour or so earlier, you could have dined with us. What do you say, Blanche?
Can we get you something now?
No, thank you.
Oh, nonsense. You'll have something to drink, a glass of wine.
No, really.
It should be whiskey, but then we have no whiskey. Fool that I am. Why don't I keep some whiskey at our house? Some coffee.
There really is no need.
There is. Blanche, my dear, make him some coffee. Make us all some coffee.
Yes.
And you'll have some cake, too.
Very well, thank you.
Oh, splendid, splendid. Oh, and let me get you a cigar to smoke when you've had your coffee. Oh, what am I doing? Hmm? I haven't even asked you to sit down. Now, there. That's a comfortable chair. Now sit down, my dear fellow. I can't tell you how delighted I am to see you.
You haven't changed. You haven't changed at all.
Oh. But tell me, what brings you to Paris?
I'm living here.
No!
I have a small apartment in the Rue des Dames. Oh, not far from here, off the Boulevard de Clichy.
Why didn't you tell me? I could have helped you move in.
Oh, there was no need for that. Well, I brought no furniture with me, and what little I needed, I bought here.
You bought? Oh, my dear boy, I could have loaned you all that you needed. Why go to that expense?
No great expense, I assure you. And I'm not exactly poverty-stricken, you know. But tell me about yourself. How about you?
Me? Oh, well, you see, I'm married. What do you think of my wife?
What on earth do you expect me to say to that?
Oh, but isn't she wonderful?
Yes,
no, I tell you, my boy, lose no time. Get married as soon as ever you can. I am the happiest man alive.
You have every reason to be.
Yes, oh, look at her. Doesn't she make a picture? Chardin. That's who? Chardin. I tell you, I've seen all the most beautiful women in the world, but I have never seen anyone more beautiful than Madame Dirk Struve.
You don't be quiet, Dirk. I shall go away.
Oh, mon petit chou.
Your coffee, Mr. Morm.
Thank you.
As I sipped my coffee, I took the opportunity to study Blanche Struve more closely. While she was not the ravishing creature that Dirk's lovesick fantasy saw, there was about her a grave comeliness. And her figure was certainly beautiful. When he spoke of Chardin, it was not without reason. She reminded me vividly of that pleasant housewife, even if she lacked the mob cap and apron. I could imagine her sedately busy among her pots and pans, making a ritual of her household duties. Her reserve was not without mystery. And though she was English, I could not exactly place her. It was not at all obvious from what rank in society she sprang, what had been her upbringing, or how she had lived before her marriage. There was something in her grave intentness that excited one's interest as she sat there, an affectionate smile on her lips, quietly getting on with her mending, while Dirk and I talked.
And what are you working on now?
Oh, this. It's practically finished.
Ah. An Italian scene, as ever?
Why not? I can get my models here just as well as in Rome.
Don't you think it's very beautiful?
Oh, this foolish wife of mine thinks I'm a great artist.
You show him some of the others, Dirk. The two little boys.
No. He doesn't want to see them.
Yes, I do. Come on.
I felt I owed it to him to feign enthusiasm. Although more than used to ridicule, he remained eager for praise and couldn't resist an opportunity to display his work, which was the same stale, obviously picturesque rubbish he had been painting for years, false, insincere, and shoddy. The contradiction between the man and his art was one I felt I would never be able to resolve.
Tell me, Have you by any chance run across a painter called Charles Strickland?
You don't mean to say you know him?
Oh, I did, before he came here. I was wondering...
He's a beast.
Oh, my poor Rochelle. She doesn't like him.
I don't like bad manners.
Bad manners?
Well, I asked him to come one day to look at my pictures. Mm? He came and I showed him everything I had here. He, the fact is... He looked at all of them. He didn't say anything, and I thought... Well, I thought he's reserving his judgment till the end.
And? Was he?
All he said was, I came to ask you to lend me 20 francs.
Which Dick actually gave him.
Well, I didn't like to refuse him. Anyway, I was so taken aback.
And that was all he said?
Yes, he just put the money in his pocket and walked out.
As I said, an ill-mannered beast.
I shouldn't have minded if he'd said my pictures were bad. But he said nothing. Nothing at all.
And you will go on telling the story, Dick?
Oh, well.
Well, I hope I never see him again.
I know, but the fact remains, he's a great artist, a very great artist.
Strickland? Are we talking about the same man?
A big fellow with a red beard. Charles Strickland, an Englishman.
But he had no beard when I knew, but... Hang it, my man only began painting 5 years ago.
I don't think he's ever sold a picture. When you speak to people about him, they only laugh. But I know he's a great artist.
Where could I find him?
I don't know where he lives, but he goes to a cafe in the Avenue de Clichy every evening and plays chess. If you like, I'll take you there.
Would you?
Of course.
And perhaps there'd be a chance of seeing some of his pictures.
Well, he won't show you a thing. There's a dealer I know who has two or three, but I must go with you. I must show them to you myself.
Dirk, you make me so impatient. How can you talk like that about his pictures when he treated you as he did?
My sweetheart, you don't understand. Beauty is something wonderful and strange that the artist fashions out of the chaos of the world in the torment of his soul. And when he's made it, it is not given to all to know it. Tomorrow I shall take you to see Strickland. It's not far from here. In fact, you can see it.
The big one on the corner.
Yes, that's right.
Strange.
What is strange?
It's the very same cafe I saw him at 5 years ago when I last met him.
No, is he here? Ah, yes, there he is.
Hmm? No, I don't see him.
Yes, look, just there in the corner, playing chess.
Is that him?
Strickland!
Oh, it's you, Fatty.
I've brought an old friend to see you.
Well, sit down and shut up. I'm busy, can't you see?
It's all right, Dirk. We'll wait and we'll have a drink while we're waiting.
Garçon?
Actually, I welcomed the opportunity to examine Strickland at my ease. It was no wonder I hadn't recognized him. His red beard, ragged and untrimmed, hid much of his face... and his hair was long. Above all, he was now extremely thin, which made his great nose protrude more arrogantly and emphasized his cheekbones. His clothes, the same suits that he had worn 5 years before, now hung upon him torn, stained, and threadbare. But nevertheless, he gave an impression of great strength, which somehow his emaciation made the more striking.
Voila. Échec et mat. Checkmate.
Zut. Tu m'as bien dupé.
Ah, c'est pas vrai. Et tout droit pour toutes les boissons.
Nom de chien. Voilà. Jusqu'à demain, hein.
Demain, tu verras.
Je me serai bien vengé. Au revoir.
Au revoir, Joubert. Peace and every time.
Now, can we talk?
Only if you've got something worth saying.
I've brought an old friend to see you.
I didn't know you had any friends.
Of yours, Strickland, an old friend of yours.
I've never seen him in my life.
What? What do you mean? You told me...
I saw your wife the other day, Strickland.
Huh?
I felt sure you'd like to have the latest news of her.
Oh, yes. Yes, now I remember.
I thought you might.
Yes, we had a jolly evening together. How long ago was it?
5 years.
Oh, you must have a drink. You too, fatty. Oh. Garçon, encore toi, absinthe.
No. I must go. I've brought you two together. Now I will go back to my wife.
Now, please yourself. Plutôt deux garçons, deux saumons.
Goodbye, my dear fellow. I'll see you again soon.
Oh, yes, indeed. And thanks for bringing me.
Oh, not at all, my dear friend, not at all. Anytime. Only to delight it, please.
What a clown that man is.
He thinks you're a great artist.
No, he's a fine judge, I'm sure.
As a matter of fact, that's exactly what he is.
What the hell do you suppose I care, anyway?
Will you let me see some of your pictures?
Why should I?
I might feel inclined to buy one.
I might not feel inclined to sell one.
Are you making a good living?
Do I look it?
You look half-starved.
I am half-starved.
Then let's have a bit of dinner. Not that I really care a tuppenny damn if you starve or not.
Good. But I'd like a decent meal. Not here, though, not this time. Oh, don't worry. It won't cost you too much. I enjoyed my dinner.
Good.
Do you want me to talk to you?
If you've anything to say.
Oh, it's been a long time since I saw anyone from... A long time.
You've changed quite a bit.
Yes, I dare say.
Are you still living where you were?
No. I got out of that place pretty quickly. It was too expensive.
Life can't have been very comfortable then.
No, what do I want with comfort? Something to sleep on, somewhere to sit. What more?
You still need to eat.
I haven't actually starved.
You sold some of your pictures?
Good God, no.
Then how on earth have you managed?
I found things to do. This is gay Paris.
So?
It's the English, mostly. Things they want to see and experience. It seems they can only find them in Paris. They hired me to help them look.
I see.
When they were a little worse for drink, they never quibbled about the price.
You're talking in the past. Have you given that up now?
Well, look at me. I needed to inspire a little confidence, however drunk my clients were. I'm a bit too shabby now, even for them. But I still manage, laboring, scavenging. I don't care what I do so long as I've enough for what I need, paint and canvas.
Ah. Yes. Dirk has seen some of your work, apparently.
Oh, that fat idiot. What does he know?
Have you exhibited any of it?
What the hell for?
I should have thought you'd like to know what other people thought about it.
Yes, you would.
Don't you want... fame, or at least to be appreciated.
If one doesn't care tuppence for the opinion of the individual, how can one care for the opinion of the crowd?
We're not all reasonable beings.
Who makes fame? Critics.
Well, so it should be a pleasant sensation to think of people you don't know, whom you've never seen, receiving pleasure. No, more than that. Receiving subtle, passionate emotions from the work of your hands. Everyone... likes power. I can't imagine a more wonderful exercise of it than to move the souls of men to pity and terror.
Melodrama.
And why should you mind whether you paint well or badly?
I don't. I only want to paint what I see.
Well, I know I couldn't write on some desert island with the certainty that no eyes but mine would ever see what I had written.
Ah, that's it. I've thought sometime of an island. Lost in some boundless... far remote place. I could live in some hidden valley with strange trees and silence. Yes, there I think I could find what I want.
Looking back on the last 5 years, do you think it was worth it? You gave up a comfortable home, an averagely happy and prosperous life for a pretty rotten time here, by all accounts. If you had the time over again, would you still do what you did?
Yes.
You know you haven't asked a single thing about your wife and children. Do you never think of them?
Never.
Never a moment's regret for all the unhappiness you've caused them.
I don't think of the past at all. The only thing that matters is the everlasting present.
And you're happy?
Yes. I'm afraid you disapprove of me.
Not at all. I don't disapprove of a boa constrictor. On the contrary, I'm interested in its mental processes.
Uh-huh. So it's a purely professional interest you take in me?
Purely.
Then it's right that you don't disapprove of me. You have a despicable character.
Perhaps that's why you feel at home with me.
Yeah. One feels at home with the unlikeliest of people.
Ah. I take it you haven't led a completely solitary existence.
What do you mean?
Well, you've been in love since you came to Paris.
You harped on that before, I remember. I tell you, life isn't long enough for love and art. And all that business. It's a disgusting waste of time.
What's the good of trying to humbug me?
I don't know what the hell you're getting at.
All right. I'll tell you. For months, the matter never comes into your head. All that business. You think you've finished with it, for good and all. Your soul is your own. You can walk with your head in the stars. Then suddenly you can't stand it anymore. You realize that your feet have been walking in the mud. You have an overmastering desire to roll in it. Hmm? You find some woman, some low, coarse creature, and you fall upon her like a wild animal. You drink till you're blind with rage. But here's the strange thing. When it's over, there's no disgust. You feel extraordinarily pure. Disembodied spirit, able to touch beauty as if it were a palpable thing. You feel like God. Can you explain that to me?
Damn you. God damn you.
I settled down in Paris and began in, I confess, a somewhat desultory fashion to work on a play. I spent long hours wandering the city, strolling through its galleries and idling along the quay, dipping into books that I never meant to buy. In the evenings, I visited my friends, perhaps most frequently of all, the Struves.
I congratulate you, Dirk. You just cooked the best spaghetti I have ever tasted at dinner for a king.
Oh, nonsense, my dear boy. You should taste my dear wife's. That's spaghetti, I tell you.
It's not true, Mr. Morm. I let him cook because he's so much better than I.
Not so, my precious. You are perfect at everything.
In your eyes, my dear.
I admit I was puzzled sometimes at their relationship. She was, I believed, utterly devoted to him, but there was always that mysterious reserve, those enigmatic silences that gave one the impression that she was concealing something. Dirk concealed nothing. Indeed, the only time I recall seeing her put out of countenance was when he insisted on describing, with a wealth of detail, the effects of a purge he had taken.
So, you see, it was extremely awkward for me. At the most unfortunate moments, I had to keep running.
Yes, I can imagine.
Dirk, will you stop it? You seem to enjoy making a fool of yourself.
Oh, my sweetheart, if I upset you, I will never second answer, I promise you, no matter how long I find myself constipated.
For goodness sake, hold your tongue.
Yes, my love.
And when he worked, it was with the same bustle and enthusiasm that he gave to the recounting of such embarrassing personal matters. One day, however, he took time off to go with me to the dealer who had Strickland's pictures.
As I tell you, monsieur, he came and took them away.
But why?
How should I know? But I tell you, I am not sorry. Such paintings I will never sell.
Listen, I tell you, you are mistaken. Some day those pictures will be worth more than all you have in your shop.
So you have said before, but I will go by my judgment.
You are worse than mistaken. You are stupid. Hmm? Remember Monet, who couldn't get anyone to buy his pictures for 100 francs?
Yes,
but what are they worth
yes,
now?
Yes, true, but at that time there were 100 painters just as good as Monet who couldn't sell their pictures. And their pictures are still worth nothing. Merit may bring success, but not necessarily.
And it still has to be proved that your friend has merit.
And how will you recognize merit?
There is only one way. By success.
Philistine.
When people want his pictures, he will have merit. Just now, no one wants them. Least of all, me.
For all Dirk's championship of his work, Strickland treated him with a brutal disdain. Yet there was some force in Strickland that always drew the fat Dutchman back again, fawning like a clumsy dog, while all but inviting the blow he dreaded. One day in the late autumn, Strickland and I were at his usual café on the Avenue de Clichy. I saw him not infrequently, and we had just finished a game of chess. We were almost exactly matched, and on this occasion I had beaten him.
Will you lend me 20 francs?
I wouldn't dream of it.
Why not?
Why not? It wouldn't amuse me.
I'm frankly hard up, you know.
I don't care.
You don't care if I starve?
Why on earth should I?
And what's so funny?
You are. You're so simple. Hmm? You recognize no obligation, so why should anyone be under any obligation to you?
You'd feel uncomfortable if I went and hanged myself because I'd been turned out of my room for not paying the rent.
No, I shouldn't.
That's just bragging. You'd be overcome with remorse.
Try it and we'll see. Oh, and don't forget you're paying for the drinks.
Hmm? Oh.
Did you really think I'd lend you money?
I don't see why you shouldn't.
You surprise me.
Why?
Well, for one thing, I'm disappointed to find you're so sentimental. I should have liked you better if you hadn't tried to appeal to my sympathies.
I'd have despised you if you'd have been moved by it.
Ah, that's better. Look, if you're hard up, let me see your pictures. If there's anything I like, I'll buy it.
Go to hell. I don't need you.
I thought you wanted me to lend you some money.
I've got a commission. I'm painting the portrait of a retired plumber for 200 francs.
Oh, how did you manage that?
Well, the woman where I get my bread recommended me. I need the 20 francs to give to her.
And what's she like? Your client?
Splendid. Great red face like a leg of mutton, an enormous mole on his right cheek with long hairs growing out of it.
And you'll do a flattering portrait.
There you are, friends.
You'll still be better looking than this great lump. Since when have you had any friends, Struve?
Hello, dear. Sit down.
Thank you. Thank you. I was looking for you.
And what made you think we wanted to see you?
Oh, I wouldn't be so vain as to think you wanted to see me.
Yeah, I would be right. Who would want to see a fat, ugly duchy like you? Still, how about ordering us some drinks?
Yes, I'll do that. Garçon?
Tell me, why are you sweating so much?
Eh? Sweating? Well, I have been running.
Running? With all that fat on you? You shouldn't do things like that. Besides, it makes you even less attractive than you usually are.
If you are talking about being attractive, we should look at you.
Mm, you're quite right, you should.
No. What I meant to say was, I shouldn't try to bandy
words with this uncouth bully.
He doesn't stand a chance. He's too stupid anyway, like all Dutchmen.
How many Dutchmen have you known?
Well, if they're all like you, I don't want to know any. Least of all Dutchmen who think they can paint.
Ah, now there I have you. When you talk of Dutchmen who paint, you are talking of great men, of Pieter de Hoecke, of Van Eyck, of Rembrandt.
Oh, don't tell me you've the cheek to count yourself in their company.
No. I would not talk of myself in the same breath with them. No, it was you that said...
I wonder you have the cheek to call yourself a painter at all. Master of the chocolate box.
Now, you are really insulting. My painting's not be as good as some others, perhaps many others, but what I show is...
Oh,
things.
You don't know what you show. You don't know the first thing about it.
It is no use anymore to talk with you. Forgive me, my friend, if I do not stay here anymore with this man. I'm sorry, but here is money for the drink when the waiter comes.
Now, look, leave it with him. I'm coming with you.
No, dear friends. There is no need, but him I do not wish to see again.
Good. And good riddance.
It looked as if the worm had turned. But a mere 2 or 3 weeks later, as Christmas approached, gentler feelings got the better of Struve. He and his wife had invited me to spend the holiday with them. They would set up a Christmas tree in the studio, and small as their apartment was, just the studio, a bedroom, and the tiny kitchen, they planned to fill it with friends whom they thought less fortunate, including Strickland. Dirk found he couldn't bear the thought of the lonely painter spending Christmas Day by himself. As he was shy about seeing Strickland again, he asked me to be present at the reconciliation on which he was now determined.
No, I didn't see him.
But he is always here at this time.
No, not today. Mind you, I've not been here for a few weeks. He could have changed his routine.
Ah, that's the man he plays chess with. I will ask.
Bonjour, Monsieur Gervais.
Ah, bonjour, monsieur.
We were looking for Monsieur Strickland.
Strickland? Il n'est pas là.
Ah, so I see. Do you know where he is?
Il est malade.
He's ill?
Yes, you did not know.
Ah, no. No, I did.
How long?
4, 5 days, a week. I have not seen him.
A week? So it must be serious.
Yes, very serious,
oh,
I think.
We must go to him at once. He has no one to look after him.
Do you know where he lives?
No, I don't know. Don't you?
No. Do you know where he lives,
monsieur? Non, monsieur, j'ai aucune idée.
Oh, we must find him. We must find him at once. Come on.
Wait a moment. Where are we going to look? We must have some plan.
Oh, this time he may be dying. And when we get there, it'll be too late.
Calm down and let's think.
Oh, why did I quarrel with him? Oh, how stupid of me.
It's much more than he deserves to have you worrying about him. Now, listen. This is the cafe he always goes to, so he can't live very far away. Now, then there's the Hotel des Belges. They may be able to tell us if he left an address.
The Hotel des Belges, yes. Let's go there.
No, on the other hand, that was 5 years ago that he left there, so...
Why didn't he let someone know? He could have sent a message.
I've got it. The portrait commission, the woman at the baker's.
What are you talking about?
Oh, he has a portrait to paint. The woman where he buys his bread arranged it for him. Let's find out what bakers there are in the neighbourhood. Look, I'm going to ask them at the bar. Ah.
What did I tell you? The second one we tried, and here we are.
Yes, you're right, but please, let us hurry.
Now, did the concierge say on the right or on the left when we got to the top?
All right. No, left. I don't remember. We must go back and ask her.
No, it's all right. We'll try both sides.
Shall I knock?
Yes, go on.
Supposing he's dead.
Not him.
Say, I told you.
Nonsense. Strickland, are you there? Strickland? Is anyone here?
Haven't you got a match, you fool? Oh,
thank God! We thought you were dead.
I still can't see you. Here's a candle. Now.
Oh, my poor friend. I had no idea you were ill. Oh, why didn't you let me know? You were thinking I had taken offense at what you said. Well, if I had, it was stupid.
Oh,
now be reasonable. At least let us make you comfortable.
If you want to do something for me, give me some milk. I haven't been able to get up for 3 days.
You've had nothing for 3 days?
I've had water.
Oh, I'll go at once and I'll get you milk and what else would you like?
And get him some bread, perhaps a little fruit. Oh,
yes.
And a thermometer.
Yes, a thermometer. Now, don't worry, I'll be quick.
You damn fool.
Your forehead's burning. You have a fever. Let me feel your pulse.
The thermometer Dirk brought back confirmed that Strickland had a temperature of 104, and it seemed to me essential that we brought a doctor to him. However, when Dirk and I reached the street, fresh after the stuffy attic, the Dutchman begged me to go first of all with him to his studio, though he would not tell me why. Blanche was laying the table for dinner when we got there.
My dear, I want you to do something for me.
Good heavens, Dick. You look as if the world was coming to an end. Whatever is it?
Strickland is very ill.
Yes, he may be dying. I want you to let me bring him here.
Oh, no.
Oh, he is alone in a filthy attic. There is not a soul to look after him.
I... I have no objection to your nursing him.
Oh, but my dear one, I couldn't bear to leave him where he is. I shouldn't sleep a wink for thinking of him. Besides, he could die.
I will never have him in my house. Never.
Oh, you explain to her. He can't be left in that wretched hole.
I must admit that it would be easier to nurse him here. But it would be very inconvenient. Somebody would have to be with him day and night.
If he comes here, I shall go.
Oh, my love, I hardly recognize you. You who are so good and kind. Oh, please. Oh, please, please don't cry, I beg you. Oh, how could I be so unfeeling? Oh, my adorable, beautiful, understanding wife, of whom I'm so utterly unworthy. Oh, please, please, please forgive me. Say you'll... Please, forgive me, do.
Dear, I've never since we first met, asked you to do anything for me.
There's nothing in the world I wouldn't do for you.
Then I beg you not to let Strickland come here. Bring a thief and a drunkard, any outcast off the street, and I promise I'll do everything I can for them gladly, but I beseech you, not Strickland.
But why?
I'm frightened of him. There's something in him that terrifies me. If you bring him here, it can only end badly.
But that's unreasonable.
No, I know I'm right. Something terrible will happen to us. He'll do us some great harm. I know it. I feel it. Derek, I implore you.
Old, you are my wife. Dearer to me than anyone in the world. No one shall come here without your consent. But you must know what it means to have a helping hand offered to you in bitter distress. This is your chance to do that.
Bring him here, then. I'll do my best for him.
Oh. Oh, my precious. Oh, let him embrace you.
Don't be so affectionate before strangers. Makes me feel such a fool.
The next day, Dirk and I went in a cab to Strickland's lodging and, with some difficulty, set about moving him and such belongings as he would need.
Do you think you can walk downstairs?
Oh, go to hell.
Well, it would be better, my dear fellow, if you could walk. I mean, it won't be easy for the two of us to carry you.
I'll leave me alone, Daniel.
It would serve you right if we did. Don't you realize how ill you are? You could die if you stay here.
What's that to you?
It's very important, my friend, that you don't die. Oh, now, come on. Come, get your legs out of bed so we can get some clothes on you. Come on.
Down the fur.
Ah, that's it. Better now. Now, let me put your boots on. So?
Ah, yes, sir. Here's your overcoat.
Yes. There. Now you should be all right.
Oh, be careful, guys.
Oh, sorry. Forgive us. But it's for your own good.
We got him downstairs and into the cab and eventually to the Struvers' apartments. He was so exhausted by then that he allowed us to put him to bed without a further word. He was ill for 6 weeks. At one time it looked as if he wouldn't live for more than a few hours, and I'm convinced that but for Dirk's doggedness he wouldn't have pulled through. He nursed Strickland with tenderness and sympathy. Nothing was too much trouble for him. But it was Blanche who most surprised me. Not only did she prove herself a capable nurse, but there was nothing to remind one how vehement had been her initial objection. I called on them frequently during this time. Late one night, she was taking her turn at looking after Strickland while her husband rested.
If you roll him towards you, I can change the sheet without waking him.
Are you sure?
Quite sure. When he sleeps like this, you could do anything. That's it. Now, put him on his back again. There.
That was very skillful. Where did you learn that?
At one time I worked in a hospital.
Really? Did you ever have a patient like him?
I don't remember one.
He really is a strange creature. If one could tell what was really in his mind.
I think the fever's clouded it these last weeks. Even when he's awake, he just stares into vacancy.
He's never talked to you? During the night, say, when you sat up with him?
Never.
Do you dislike him as much as you did?
More, if anything.
He's never thanked you for what you're doing for him, of course.
No.
He's inhuman.
He's abominable.
Strickland slowly began to recover, and sometimes I would sit with the three of them in the studio, Dirk and I talking, Strickland lying on his back in silence, Blanche at her sewing. On one occasion, I remember, I thought I recognized the shirt she was mending as Strickland's. As I looked up, I saw that his eyes were fixed on her, and that there was a curious look of irony in them. Feeling their gaze, she looked up too, and for a moment they stared at one another. I could not quite fathom her expression, a strange perplexity and, yes, alarm. Then he looked away, and slowly, almost reluctantly, she returned to her sewing. Later, still too weak to paint, Strickland would sit around the studio, silent, reading sometimes, but always on the least comfortable chair, a stool, a kitchen chair without arms. I never knew a man so entirely indifferent to his surroundings.
Oh, hello.
Oh, hello.
What's this? Why are you idling here in this disgraceful fashion?
It's a long time since I was at the Louvre. I thought I'd come and see if they had any new pictures.
But you told me you had to get one of your own finished this week.
Strickland's painting in my studio.
What?
I suggested it to myself. He's not strong enough to go back to his own place yet.
So?
Well, Strickland can't work with anyone else in the studio.
Well, that's his lookout. What happened?
He told me to get out. He wouldn't let me go on painting.
Good God. Why didn't you tell him to go to hell?
Well, he turned me out. I couldn't very well struggle with him. He threw my hat after me and locked me out.
What did your wife say?
Oh, well, she wasn't there. She'd gone out to do some marketing.
Is he going to let her in?
I don't know.
Look, would you like me to get rid of him for you?
What?
Strickland, shall I get rid of him for you?
No. No. You'd better not do anything.
The explanation for his reluctance to accept my help or indeed discuss the matter came a week later.
What the devil?
May I come in?
Well, of course, my dear.
Thank God you're here.
What? Dear fellow, you look terrible. Sit down, sit down.
Thank you.
Now, what on earth's the matter?
I didn't know where to go. I came here earlier, but you weren't in.
Oh, yes, I dined late this evening. But, well, tell me, what's happened?
My wife has left me.
You mean you and she have had a tiff?
No.
Well, it happens. Now, you mustn't be too unhappy. She'll come back.
You don't understand. She's in love with Strickland.
What?
She's in love with him.
Oh, but that's absurd. You can't bear the sight of him. You know that?
You don't understand.
Here, let me get you a whiskey and soda.
Oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do?
Now, come on. You're being an hysterical ass. You must be wrong. You can't possibly be jealous of Strickland. Here, drink this. Oh,
thank you.
Now, look. Let's go back to your studio. I'll go with you. You've simply made a fool of yourself.
How can I go back to the studio? They're there! I've left it to them.
Oh, I see. Then it's not your wife who's left you. It's you who've left your wife.
For God's sake, don't talk to me like that.
I think you'd better tell me the whole story.
Well, this afternoon I couldn't stand it anymore. I told Strickland he was well enough to go back to his own place and that I wanted the studio myself. Mm. He laughed, but he said he would go at once. He asked Blanche for some paper and string to make a parcel of his few things. You know, what we brought for him, what he needed from his room.
Yes, go on.
Well, Blanche brought him the paper and string, and he made up his parcel. Nobody said anything. As he put on his hat, he had this ironic smile on his lips. I tell you then, I was afraid. Afraid something was going to happen. And I wish I hadn't spoken.
I'm going with Strickland, Dirk.
What?
I can't live with you anymore.
Oh, my God.
I didn't want to hurt you.
My darling. My precious,
no,
precious darling.
Don't touch me, please.
No. Well, no, of course not. No, I'm sorry. I won't touch you. But please don't leave me. You can't. You mustn't. We've been so happy.
Please, let me go quietly. Don't you understand? I love Strickland. Where he goes, I shall go.
No, for your own sake, don't go. You must know he'll never make you happy. You must know what you'll have to look forward to.
It's your fault. You insisted on his coming here.
Strickland. Have mercy on her. You can't let her do it.
She can do as she pleases. She's not forced to come.
My choice is made.
Damn you, Strickland. I'll kill you!
Don't be so damn silly. You funny little man.
Get up, Dick. Here. Look. Here are your glasses. Put them on and get up.
Oh, my God. How can you be so cruel?
I can't help myself.
Oh, my darling, don't go. I can't live without you. I should kill myself. If I've done anything to offend you, please give me another chance, but please don't leave me.
Get up. You're making yourself a perfect fool.
Very well. But tell me, where will you go? You can't live at his place. You don't know what it's like. You haven't seen it.
If I don't care, why should you?
Well, how will you live? You can't live on air. He hasn't a penny.
I know.
That's why he took so long to get well. He was half starved.
I can earn money for him.
How?
I don't know. I shall find a way.
Oh, my God, no. You must be mad. Mad.
Now may I go?
No.
It's no you.
No! I will go.
You?
I can't bear to think of you living in that horrible, filthy attic. This is your home as much as mine. Here you will be comfortable. And here, let me leave you some money. You can pack up my clothes and leave them with the concierge. We'll come and collect them tomorrow. Goodbye, my dear. I am grateful for all the happiness you gave me.
In my mind's eye, as Struve closed the door behind him, I saw Strickland throw his hat onto the table and sit down on a hard kitchen chair. On his lips, that same ironic, mocking smile.
In part two of The Moon and Sixpence, dramatized in four parts by Jeffrey Siegel from the novel by W. Somerset Maugham, Maugham himself was played by Ronald Pickup, Charles Strickland by Patrick Allen, Dirk Struve, Ronnie Stevens, Blanche Struve, Rosalind Ayres, Mrs. Strickland, Margaret Whiting, Jouvert, William Hope, and the art dealer, James Bryce. The director was John Cardy.